The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Euro 2016, the playoffs. Bad blood and needle ahoy, as they say at the IAAF, as Ireland, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Sweden, Denmark and the rest scrap it out for a place in France next summer. We preview the action, then we dial up our friend, and frankly everyone's friend, Sid Lowe in Spain, to hear his eulogy for David Moyes. Plus there's Championship talk. Eight managers gone already. Could you be next? Arm yourself with our update on the savagest season. It will accept probably the last one. All of that plus questions from you in this Football Weekly Extra. That's right, listeners. And be excited when I tell you that sipping from his mug of beverage is Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Barry Glendening's here as well. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
And shadowy, softly spoken, Michael Hann has been persuaded to share a few words, venture a few opinions about Rangers.
Persuaded? I'm always desperate to come in, but you only let me in when QPR sacks someone or get relegated, so that's three or four times a season.
I said to Barry yesterday, they fired a manager at Rangers, take the padlock off that box and let's get Michael Hann out to tell us a few things. And that'll be coming up, Michael. Hold your fire, keep that powder dry, because I think, editorially, we need to start with big national football stuff. Because, Barry, this is a big weekend coming up, or a big weekend of football. The playoffs, when do they start?
They start tonight, Jim. Thursday night. When I think Norway play Hungary.
Brilliant. OK, that's very much the game I'd like to start with. What can you tell us?
I can tell you that Norway have lost every home game they've ever played in November in the last 20 years.
But they've only dropped points twice in Oslo.
But every home game in November, James, in 20 years.
Wow.
The omens are not good.
November spawned a monster very much.
But neither of these teams have been in a tournament for ages.
Well, do you know, Norway haven't been in since 2000 at a major tournament, the Euros back then. Hungary, do you know when last time Hungary were in?
1986 World Cup in Mexico.
Bless you, you do know.
Yeah.
That is a long time.
Yeah, 1972 for the European Championships.
Who are we rooting for tonight, Michael?
I think most people listening are probably rooting for neither, aren't they? They're really...
Well, Hungary.
Well, Hungary, the mention of their appearance in the 1986 World Cup gives rise to a story about Ron Atkinson, which may or may not be true, which was that John Helm and Ron Atkinson commentating on a Hungary game. John Helm couldn't work out who one of the Hungary players was, turned to Ron Atkinson off mic and asked him. Robert Atkinson gave a reply, and John Helm continued, "And number eight, if I know."
Thanks for that little beep, Ben. That was a rude word. I hope that was true, Michael.
I hope it's true. It's too good not to be true, isn't it, really?
Did you spice up our Ukraine-Slovenia preview with something similar? Did Ron ever commentate on either of those? Ukraine-Slovenia. It's the fifth time these two teams have met. Come on, Ian, which one do you want to see? Drop that nice guy charade. You don't want the Ukrainians there, or maybe you do. Maybe you don't want the Slovenians.
I don't really have an opinion, to be honest. Go Slovenia. Let's go with that.
Ukraine have an atrocious record in playoffs. They lost in their last five playoff appearances, and they've never beaten Slovenia ever.
See, now I want them to win.
But I've been in Slovenia. I've never been to Ukraine. It's a very nice place, so I'm rooting for them.
How many times have Slovenia and Ukraine played each other?
Well,
it's the fifth time these two have met, off the top of my head. But
didn't you just say that about 2 minutes ago? When Michael wasn't paying attention.
Sorry.
Did I say that?
I think so. Oh. Maybe you didn't.
Did I mention that Slovenia have never lost Ukraine? When's that game happening, Barry?
That's on Saturday at 7:45 p.m.
Mm.
And this is a rematch as well from 2000, when these two met in the playoffs for the European Championships. And Ukraine lost that one. Wow. So, mental demons to be slain.
There's all sorts of interesting tidbits about this. Ukraine coach Mikhail Fomenko saying there's not much to be cheerful about. We've lost all our previous finals playoffs, but that's history now. We're living for today and focusing on the future. It's kind of mixed messages I'm getting from Mikhailo there. Anyway, they've got loads of players out, including Stepanenko and Kucha, who are suspended. And I'm just going to pass that to Sweden-Denmark, because it is a chance to enjoy the football of one of the continental games I'm going to say underappreciated in this country. He's a giant talent. He's never got the recognition he deserves. Nicholas Bentner.
you laugh, but I make money off Nicholas Bentner every season because I have a rolling bet with one of my friends that my friend insists that Bentner will score 10 goals and won the big four European leagues each season, that every season I win. So I follow Bentner's career very closely. 9 goals in 41 appearances for Wolfsburg, 32 of those appearances off the bench. 8 of his goals have come as substitute for Wolfsburg, but he's not having a happy time of it at the moment. The coach has said he's got to shape up. Bentner's saying if they don't want me here, I will be out. So I think Bentner, with a very impressive international scoring record of basically a goal every other game, he'll be fired up for this one. The Bridge Derby, as we refer to it, we fans of Scandinavian crime thrillers.
That's almost as impressive as when you said that rude word, Mark.
There you go.
That's brilliant stuff.
Have you seen Denmark?
Zlatan's in this as well, of course. Sorry.
Denmark are missing Leon Andreasen, who has a history of missing big tournaments.
Why is he out of this one, Barry?
Because he cut his left hand while opening a parcel with a knife, and he did it so badly that he had to go and have surgery on it.
He did the tendon.
Right.
Yeah. That's a horrible story.
You know what else about this game?
Clearly, I don't.
It's wonderful. Well, right. Not wonderful, but it could be the last time we see Zlatan Ibrahimovic in a match of this importance, given that he'll be 34 next year. Mm. But it could also be the end for Morten Olsen as well, who will finish at the end of the tournament. He's been in charge of Denmark for 15 years, having played for them for 19 years. So if Denmark go out here, that's the end of Morten. And no one wants to see his career end like that, surely.
There's no more to Morten. Right. Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
So the next era of that country's football will be post-Morten.
Oh, Barry wins!
There it is. I'm off. See? That's me done.
That's genius. Barry literally is off, because you're off to Australia soon, aren't you?
Tuesday.
Wow.
I think this is my last pod.
Are you ready? Are you ready down there?
People keep asking me, are you ready to go?
No, I was asking them.
All right.
Are they ready?
They'd be all right. What? There's a lot worse Irish than me down there.
Well, possibly. You running went to Slovenia and that's still trouble. There, so that's something. Wanted to say, actually, impressive though your Nicholas Bentner stats are, still got to give you Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who scored 7 of Sweden's last 11 qualifying goals. He's only just gone and won Swedish Player of the Year for the 10th time this week. Not the 10th time this week. The 10th time this week. And remember in the last playoff when they were up against Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal? There was that kind of personal duel between the two. He was on fire in one of those games. Possibly both, I think. Anyway, that's a big game. What do you want? On the Bridge Derby, what do you want?
As long as there's no disemboweled body in the middle of the bridge, I think I'll be happy.
Right.
I just want peace and love between them both.
Oh, yeah, it was kind of disembodied. It was disembodied.
I want Sweden to win because I want to see Zlatan in a major tournament.
All right.
And I'm really not fussed about seeing Bentner in a major tournament.
Good answer.
And I'm sure the taxi drivers would rather that Bentner was not in the major tournament as well.
Keep him out of
trouble. I saw an interesting stat today, actually, that Sweden have never, ever won or scored in a home qualifying game against Denmark. And then I checked and they've only played 2.
Right.
So it's not pretty underwhelming stats.
No, but it's still a good stat. Unlike the one I trotted out in our last show about Spurs never finishing above Arsenal in the Premier League. That wasn't true. It was since Arsene Wenger became manager. But since he became manager, Arsenal the only club that Spurs has never finished above. It's kind of lost its charm by now, that stat.
Still all right.
Still all right. Yeah. Anyway, what's the other playoff, Barry?
I can't remember.
Is it Bosnia? Herzegovina against Ireland?
Oh, that's the one, yeah. Yeah, I thought we were just going to overlook that.
No. And that's Friday night.
Yeah.
Right. Bosnia on a 3-game winning streak. The Republic's coming off that defeat against Poland in their final group game.
Well, Bosnia got off to a terrible start in this qualifying campaign. I think they lost their first 3, if not 4, games. They lost at home to Cyprus in the very first game. Drawn with Wales, drawn with Belgium. Were beaten badly by Israel. Beaten badly by Belgium in some of those qualifiers. But they're on their second manager of the campaign. A fella called Mehmed Bazderovic. Jonathan Wilson has spoken about him here before. It's quite an interesting story, which I'd probably repeat and not tell it as well as Jonathan does. But he has a history of sort of near misses. He's only played, he won about 55, 56 caps for Yugoslavia. Only ever played in one major tournament. Missed out on another, in which Yugoslavia lost all three group games. He missed out on another tournament because he was suspended for spitting at a linesman. Missed out on a third because he Yugoslavia were turfed out because of the civil war in the country. And Jonathan also, he told a story in here before of how your man had a near miss with his wife because he was, as a young player, you know, under 20, he was travelling on a plane from Belgrade to Sarajevo, I think, and he met this girl who caught his eye, and he was chatting to her on the plane and asked for her number, and he didn't have a pen, neither did she, so he took the number, tried to memorise it, but failed, couldn't, you know, ring her.
Nobody on this aeroplane had a pen?
Well, apparently not.
Right.
Anyway, don't ruin the magic.
Right.
So sometime later,
yep,
he's on that flight again.
Yes.
She's also on it.
Ooh.
And this time he has a pen. And they're now married and they have a grown-up daughter who's a journalist in France.
I have no recollection of Jonathan telling this story.
I'm pretty sure. Well, I've certainly heard it from him before. Anyway.
The reason she became a journalist is because it was drummed into her by both her parents from a young age.
Always carry a pen. But so Jonathan has been going around telling anyone who listened that it's Bazderovic's destiny to go to France and make amends for all these near misses.
Oh.
Whereas I prefer to think that he's just really unlucky and that streak of bad luck is going to continue this weekend.
Yeah, by now his destiny seems all too manifest. Jonathan will be on the phone because he's at all these games. Jonathan is at a lot of these games, probably all of them simultaneously for all I know. And he'll be joining us via the medium of the telephone on Monday to tell us, well, perhaps that story and others like it, one can only hope.
So...
But back to Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Yeah, Bosnia, they've an entirely fit squad to choose from. Edin Dzeko is hitting something approaching good form. Miralem Pjanic is banging in free kicks.
Pjanic, as they liked.
Pjanic?
Yeah, Pjanic.
Sorry. Miralem Pjanic is banging in free kicks from all over the place. I have a horrible feeling he's going to do for us. And Ireland have a few injury worries. And...
Amongst those injuries is Shane Long.
Yeah, he's sort of the highest profile. He's out for the first leg, might be back for the second. So I'm not hugely confident, but who knows? Who knows?
All right.
Bosnia, they're no great shakes. You know, they beat Wales 2-0, I think, in their second last qualifying game. But I watched that, and they weren't particularly impressive. But then Ireland... haven't been particularly impressive throughout the campaign, apart from that time they beat Germany.
Fingers crossed, Barry.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
Fingers crossed. Paul, PFON73, says, I really want you to discuss my plan to reserve a wildcard place in an international tournament to the team that scores the most goals in any single qualifying game. The more I think about it, says Paul, the more I'm convinced it works. You see any downside to that at all? You give a special... wildcard place to the team that can rack up the biggest score.
It's whoever comes third in Gibraltar's group, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing.
That I think would be the only downfall.
Because it's just going to come against those teams.
Yeah.
Gibraltar, San Marino. Yeah, normally I'd throw England in at this point, but that joke's old by now. Right. Okay, so sorry, Paul. We thought about it a little bit, and we don't think it works. How about a little bit of music before we tackle some of the tasty friendlies that are coming your way? Now, glamour friendlies, everybody. Let's whiz through these, Ian, shall we?
Okay.
Spain, England, for example. Jamie Vardy. Speaking of whiz, Jamie Vardy. Can't walk into that team, though, can he?
Well, I think he should do.
He should.
You know, these are friendlies. It's a time to test ourselves against good opposition. I think we made an ambitious stand in picking these friendlies rather than things that might, you know, otherwise make more money. Give some players a test. Get some answers. Even if you lose, it doesn't matter if you learn something.
Spain have won their last 8 in a row. Ooh, England have won 10. Crikey. It's quite exciting. Are you interested in this game, Michael?
No.
Oh, why not? It's
well, I go and watch quite a lot of England friendlies and they're always really, really boring.
All right, okay. Anything about the squad you want to talk about?
I agree that Jamie Vardy should have a start.
Mm.
There you go.
Ian?
Yeah, I'll go with Vardy. I'd let Harry Kane have a bit of a rest. Stick Vardy up front, give him a chance.
Right.
There's a nice casino in Alicante, which Jamie Vardy might like to go to after the game.
I'm not sure if that's a helpful suggestion, Barry. Yeah,
it's probably not one.
But he likes to play poker in casinos.
I know he does. Belgium, Italy, another high-profile friendly, which is going to actually be halted at 39 minutes to mark the in an act of remembrance for the victims of the Heysel disaster. The names of all 39 victims will be read out, and both teams will be retiring the number 39 shirt.
Sorry, which game is this?
Belgium against Italy.
Okay.
Belgium at the current world number one. Did you know that? They won their last four since that defeat by Wales. Anyway, that's an interesting game. Wales themselves are up against the Netherlands. It's a bit like that scene in A Star Is Born, when, which depending on which remake you're seeing, the actor's up on the stage and he's collapsing drunk, and then the young starlet comes up. Wales very much in the scenario, the young starlet and Holland, not to put too fine a point at it, the kind of drink-sozzled old buffoon.
Are either James Mason or Chris Christopherson.
Pretty much so, yeah. Which was your favourite?
Well, I was thinking about this the other day, actually, because I used to think that Chris Christopherson and Barry Gibb were the same person, based on seeing Barbara Streisand pictured with both of them.
Right.
I think that the Netherlands are more like Chris Christopherson because of the liberal attitude to drugs.
Manager, by the way, of the Netherlands is still Danny Blind. So that's something. And Ian Robbins back, looking in sizzling form. So there you go. They have a 100% record over the Welsh. But it'll be an interesting test, that. See how the Welsh are going to, you know, what kind of, how it's all going to work out for them. Chris Coleman's plans going forward and all that. I'm moving on now, Barry, to France, Germany. No Benzema in this. I think he'd be injured. But he's a bit busy. So this is the strangest story for how many years in football?
Lots. Cool one like probably.
I mean, and it just keeps on rolling. I assumed, I think most of us did when he first got, you know, taken into the station, that it was all going to be a misunderstanding and he'd soon be sent on his way, but not at all. Phone recordings of his conversations with Valbuena.
It's not looking good.
It's not looking good, and, you know, neither by all accounts
did
Valbuena.
I haven't been following this since he got charged. So
well, he's been charged, and people mentioning the severity of the possible penalty he could be facing, 5 years in jail, that kind of thing. Then the phone tap that has been used as evidence against him has been released, and he's discussing with Valbuena the fact that these people have the recordings, the fact that Valbuena doesn't seem to be taking them seriously, and he should, pay them the money, and you see everything.
Right. To be fair, Benzema's initial statement in explanation, which appeared to be, I wasn't actually blackmailing him, I've got a mate who was blackmailing him, and I was just passing on the blackmail request, seemed to be, I don't know, I'm no lawyer, but maybe not legally watertight?
Yeah. Anyway, in amongst all this, France will be playing Germany. A lot of players out. Mario Gomez is back in the Germany side. And I know that Raphael Honigstein is really, really, really excited about one player in the German squad, Schalke's Leroy Sané. So, you know, maybe if you do happen across this game, keep an eye on that fella. PSG keeper Kevin Trapp's going to get a call-up, which is a bit of a worry because he's not the most reliable. Anyway, Kingsley Coman's got a call-up for France, which is great news for him. And so has Ben Arfa.
Yes.
Nice to see him back.
After getting out of the hell on earth that he described his career at Newcastle to be, which might have been more enjoyable if he'd, you know, shown a leg in training here or there.
Mm.
Might have played more. You know, I'm just throwing it out there.
You reap what you sow, don't you?
You do, very much so. And you sleep in the bed you make.
Absolutely. You bathe in the bath that you draw.
Apart from Sepp Blatter, who's currently in hospital, having had a minor nervous breakdown. He's not sleeping in the bed he made. He's sleeping in a bed that a nurse made.
Right, that's also true.
Those good corners.
Very good corners.
Mm. Right.
I wish him well.
I just hope he can afford his hospital bills.
Right, what's up next? Not your championship chat yet, Michael. First, let's speak to underexposed Spanish correspondent Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, that's right, it is Jimbo. Because it might get confusing for you, you know, but with all the people you speak to.
Yes, it might get very confusing.
Yeah.
I've mostly been speaking Spanish this week.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, because, of course, the Spanish want to kind of get a handle on David Moyes.
Yeah, it's a sad business.
Well, it's disappointing, if only from a purely selfish point of view, because David Moyes was living in probably the most beautiful city in Spain, and I no longer have quite so much of an excuse to go up there.
Oh, you could always, you know, just go up there and have tapas and surf a bit or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Mm.
Sid, I loved your piece, your kind of eulogy.
Oh, there goes the dog. Sorry.
There goes the dog. The first plane David Moyes ever boarded as Real Sociedad manager could not land and the last could not take off. What happened in between, Sid?
Well, that kind of sums up his time at Real Sociedad, right. I think, in a way, that you know, the team never... I mean, Real Sociedad were never, until the very last game, were never really bad, but they were never really good. They never quite, to extend that metaphor, properly took off. And the sense, I think, a very clear sense that I have, and I think that a lot of people in San Sebastian have, and probably they would, I think, have it in a more... critical, they would view it more critically than I do. The other sense is that he never really landed, that he never really kind of, it never felt like he was properly there. There's a sense of him having been a little bit isolated, a sense of him having perhaps not always entirely integrated. Now, obviously, there's lots of questions about why that happens, whether actually the impression is partly false, and whose fault it is, if indeed it is the case, and whether or not it even matters, right, as a manager of a club. Of course, if all of that comes together with a team that's just not getting the results that people expected, then you get a sacked manager. Although I think as well, some of the expectations weren't quite in the right place as well.
Sid, he lived in a hotel his entire time there. He didn't make much effort to learn, if any effort to learn the language. Was he the kind of sort of Brit abroad that shouts at waiters and eats egg and chips for breakfast, dinner, and
tea? Well, I think there's an element of people in San Sebastian thinking that that's the case, and I think there are a lot of people who, and this is one of the reasons why I've kind of spoken quite a lot with Spanish journalists this week and so on, because there's been a sense of, oh, he was aloof, he thought he was superior, he thought that Real Sociedad was beneath him, and I just don't think that's true. Having spoken to him quite a lot over the course of the year, I think it's more that when someone doesn't have the communication skills, when someone's role is by definition to be the authority figure by definition, and he's brought to the club precisely to try and get players who are perceived to have been cruising for a bit to really make an effort, but doesn't have the communication skills to offer up the nuance and to manage personalities as well as he would like. And I think you can end up looking like that without it necessarily being deliberate. But certainly, I mean, as you say, look, at the end of the year, he didn't speak any Spanish, but, you know, we're talking about a 52-year-old who spent his entire life surrounded by British football. It's not necessarily that easy. I think it's very easy to kind of say, oh, well, he should have learned the language, and perhaps there should have been more effort to do that, and he did begin with classes, but I think then didn't continue them. But I think that there is an assumption that it's easy, and it's not.
Sid, I did read beyond the first line of your article, and further down...
You're about the only one, Jimbo.
No, I doubt that very much. Further down, you list some of the highlights of his, kind of just under a year in charge. And, of course, there's that amazing 4-3 win over Sevilla, the victory over Barcelona, and you say the time he ate crisps...
Yes.
This has slipped my memory. What was it?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously the point of saying that was a way of expressing that there haven't been a huge amount of highlights. And this is kind of the point. It's been a bit sort of flat. I mean, it's rarely been really awful. And there's been times when I've watched them play and thought, they're getting there. And then it kind of doesn't happen the next week. For example,
what about they never won
two games in a row.
He got sent off.
But Chris, he got sent off.
Oh, okay. And he hit them in the stands with a fan.
And he didn't know where to... I mean, genuinely, I spoke to him about this, and he didn't know where to go, because, of course, when you're sent off as a manager at a new stadium, you don't know where you go. So basically, he just clambered over the barrier and sat with the fans, and a fan comes to him, some crisps, so he starts eating them. That was his crisp moment. He was then offered some of those corn snack things. Let me see if I can get Stella to eat a little bit more quiet. He was then given some of those corn snack things that break your teeth, and very wisely he turned those down.
Right. I love those. Those touched to corn, they're great. While Sid's enjoying this moment with the stay, I'll just say that there's someone at the door. There's some exciting other stories. Are you okay to tell us about those, Sid?
Yeah.
Okay. Sevilla, how to get a handle on them?
Hang on. Let me just drag her up here.
Anyway.
Come here, you.
The same problem in his interview with Graeme Hunter.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What happened there?
The dog with the bank account wouldn't shut up.
Oh, right.
In the background.
I wouldn't shut up.
The dog was there. Teddy, got this. The dog was kind of squealing like a canary, wasn't it? In Rosie, I mean, not Stella.
Right. Yeah, right, OK. Sid, anyway, Sevilla, I wanted to mention them, or for you to mention them. Bipolar side, I mean, they get hammered by Juventus, then they beat Barcelona straight after that, then they get hammered by Man City, and then they beat Real Madrid. What on earth's going on down there?
Good question. I mean, I think they're a side that have probably a... I think this year they've been a side that haven't kind of... They haven't clicked yet. They've got a lot of new players. I think they... There's a kind of sense of the some of the collective spirit from previous seasons maybe isn't there, and that it needs a big opponent to get it out of them. Although, admittedly, obviously, Juventus and Man City are big opponents. Actually, they were very good, weren't they, in Manchester against Man City? And I just think that I also think that they kind of benefited this week, time around at least, from Real Madrid kind of collapsing a little bit. The second half, Real Madrid were kind of really pathetic, but in the almost literal sense of the word pathetic, you sort of watch them before. God, this isn't right. They were so bad.
It's funny because they had players like James Rodriguez back and Gareth Bale back.
Well, James and Bale actually both played quite well. And James in particular when he came on, but he came on quite late, I think 20, 25 minutes to go, something like that. He was very, very good indeed. But at that point, Konoplyanka, let's see if I can say his name right, Konoplyanka was absolutely brilliant. But brilliant in a very kind of old-fashioned sort of way. It was a bit of this, it was the kind of the left winger who says, "I'll just give me the ball," and just sort of starts running round and round people in circles. You sort of wanted his socks around his ankles and his shirt hanging out because it was brilliant.
Excellent, Sid. Listen, one last thing. Michu, extraordinary trajectory of this former Swansea favourite, once rated as £30 million worth of footballer, now plying his trade in the fourth division, is that right?
Yeah, and let me try and explain what fourth division means as well, because actually fourth division makes it probably sound bigger than it really is. So in Spain, you've got a first division, 20 teams. You've got a second division, like you would expect. You then got a second division B, which is split across four regionalised groups. In other words, you could call it anything from the third tier to the seventh tier, because it's third, fourth, fifth and sixth. So then you get down to the third division, which is where Michu's going to play, what's known as the third division. But that's split across, I think it's 16 or 17 20-team divisions. Wow. So it's, you know, it really is a quite a long way down. And Michu is going to play for Langreo, which is coached by his brother. He's been training with them pretty much all season. And, of course, having rescinded his contract with Swansea now, he can now start playing. His brother says that, you know, obviously he hopes this is just a temporary thing, that while he gets fit again, while he checks to see that his ankle responds well. And also his brother talked about the kind of the emotional recovery that Michu needs to kind of get back in touch with football, feel like an athlete again, feel like a sportsman again. And then the hope would then be that he would be able to find a club at first division level or maybe not, maybe at second division level. And I think what this tells you, of course, is just how much damage the ankle injury has done to him. And I think it's, I mean, I'm obviously hideously biased when it comes to former Oviedo players, but this is, you know, I think it's actually really quite honourable. I mean, he had a lot of offers in the summer and chose not to take them because just wasn't fit, preferred to finish his time at Swansea and now go and play with what's essentially an amateur team to see if he can still do it. And then if he can, then maybe try and get a club again. He's only 29. So there would, in theory, of course, be, what, 3, maybe 4 years left in his career?
Absolutely. All right. Well, fingers crossed for him as well, then. Sid, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Go and attend to Estella now.
I will certainly try. I might have to take her out with a tennis ball, because otherwise I think she's going to go crazy.
Yeah, that sounds fair. All right, then, Sid. You enjoy.
Okie dokie.
You enjoy.
Cheerio.
Bye, Sid.
Does he mean he's going to kill her with a tennis ball?
No, I think he means... I think you know,
like one of those serving machines.
Yeah, he's maybe got one of those slings. That'll be funny.
Oh, still,
it's a lovely, it's a lovely image, that, isn't it? It's Dr. Sid and his dog, and they're scampering around together. And there's a tennis ball. It's nice, that, heartwarming. I tell you what else is heartwarming. Michael Hahn. Michael, what's going on in the championship? Is that 8 managers? 8 managers gone now, is it?
I lose track. I mean, when the day that Chris Ramsey got sacked, of course, Chris Powell was sacked from Huddersfield as well, and there were suggestions that maybe race had been involved. I don't think so. you would have to say that neither Huddersfield nor QPR appeared to be doing awfully well, and it didn't come, certainly in the case of Chris Ramsay, it didn't come as an enormous surprise that he was gone. The fans had never liked him. And,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The fans... QPR fans have been simultaneously spoiled and dismayed by Tony Fernandez's regime. They've kind of got used to big names. And so they then get... Even though they then complain that we're getting second-rate big names... And these people don't perform. They still have this thirst for more and more fame coming into Loftus Road. So Ramsay just didn't seem to fit, and I think he got badly treated by QPR fans.
To what extent has Neil Warnock's return slaked that thirst for big names?
Well, I tell you what was noticeable on Saturday when QPR played a dismal 0-0 draw against Preston without a single chance being created. When Warnock had all five of the so-called prestige players, Leroy Fair, Charlie Austin, Matty Phillips, Sandro, and so prestigious I can't even remember who the fifth is, that's how dismal it is. And selected Carl Henry at right back, Carl Henry who whenever Ramsay picked him there were boos from the stands, and Julia Hoylett, who is routinely treated as a pariah at Loftus Road. That game, Warnock afterwards, the mood on the message boards was Warnock who got them playing in a shape. It was an encouraging performance, it was great stuff. And there were a load of us saying, hang on, if Ramsay had picked that team and produced that performance, there would have been a riot at Loftus Road. I mean, it was awful stuff. That's not to say that Warnock should have been booed. I mean, clearly, you know, new managers can't change things overnight. But it just seemed indicative of double standards. It was not a great thing. Warnock, a lot of QPR fans also seem to have forgotten that many of us felt that Warnock's time had come when he was sacked first time round. The complaints about Ramsay with that he didn't have tactics. Well, Warnock is not a tactical messiah. Warnock is up and at 'em, lads, up and at 'em. They don't like it, up 'em. That's basically Neil Warnock. I fear that his reputation might end up, QPR might end up being damaged by this return, but the whole business of him coming back in to offer advice to the first team with Ramsay looking like he had a gun to his head saying, I really wanted Neil Warnock to come in and help me, looked very odd. Then there were the stories coming out that Warnock was giving the team talks before the game and at halftime after Ramsay had had his say. It seemed like a recipe for disaster. And Warnock now saying, well, I wouldn't mind a couple more players. Mate, you're not the manager, you're the caretaker. And then saying, I'd like to be picking the new manager. It just speaks of chaos. And it's Tony Fernandez in the summer said that QPR needed stability and consolidation. Then they didn't sell Charlie Austin, Matt Phillips, Leroy Fair and Sandro. Well, they couldn't really sell Sandro because he wasn't allowed in the country. More great QPR organisation. And so we were left with these big name players.
Couldn't they have sold him outside the country?
Well, I don't know who they could have sold him to because he did not have his home office documentation and so was not legally allowed to be...
Okay.
And I suspect that would have made the details... Well, what Brazilian clubs are going to buy anyone from an English team? Bearing in mind the wage differentials.
That's fair enough, yeah.
So Ramsay was saddled with these big-name players, having been told he only needed to consolidate. Suddenly it became, oh, actually, now we need to get promoted with these players. What we knew, QPR were ridiculous. They were hanging on for 15 million for Charlie Austin, a player with 1 year left in his contract. Should have taken the 10 million that was offered. Should have taken the lower offer that West Brom made for Matt Phillips. And they could have actually rebuilt the team.
Is Charlie Austin not doing it for you this season?
Well, Austin has had time out injured, but... those players do not want to be at QPR, and who can blame them? So, yeah, grim stuff. But the championship, you know...
I was going to ask, they're talking about Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, they're talking about Nigel Pearson, they're talking, Michael, about Tim Sherwood as potential long-term candidates for the bench.
I don't think it matters who's the manager. The problem is the club. It's not the manager. You know, you'd have a dream team of me and Barry managing, and we would get probably the same results as a dream team of Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp.
Have you tried pulling the plug out, leaving it 10 seconds and sticking it back in?
they tried that, yeah.
Did they try that? Well, anyway, all sorts of... You know, Fulham, who are level, I think, on points with you,
yeah, Kit Simon's gone as well.
He's gone, and Alan Kerbyshew's been kind of an advisor. In much the same way that the Americans used to send advisors, you know, before...
To Vietnam.
Yeah, Vietnam. He's been advising Fulham for a while.
Yeah, that's what Neil Warnock did at QPR. He came in with the napalm.
Well, anyway, he's not technically, I think, the manager, but he is their fifth kind of manager-ish fellow in 3 years, so that's good going. And the other managers who've gone, Uwe Rosler, of course, Chris Powell, you mentioned Guy Luzon, Steve Evans, and then back in again. And, Marinus, I can't pronounce that, Marinus Jukwiesen. Jukwiesen?
From Brentford.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, Gary Bowyer as well, after 3 years at Blackburn. Hey, that's another place Tim Sherwood could go, because he was, you know, he's got big a club legend.
Isn't Blackburn a chalice that's even more poison than QPR?
Is it?
I don't think it's as bad as it used to be, but I could be wrong on that.
He held that job for 3 years. That suggests that there's a certain amount of stability there.
Well, the interesting thing will be if Mark Warburton comes back from Glasgow to the Championship. A lot of interest in him from QPR and Fulham, obviously, given his West London heritage. Mm. But I believe that things are not altogether great at Rangers right now.
The other Rangers.
The other Rangers.
Similarly troubled. Well, even more troubled, actually. A lot of people actually asking us to discuss the situation at Rangers, that Rangers up north. Ian, could you give them a quick... We'll get you and Murray on the phone maybe on Monday. Would you like to just fill in the blanks in the meantime, Ian?
Yeah, imagine pain, thunder, blood, explosions, all of that very, very loudly inside your head, but then have that running forever and ever and ever. And that's pretty much the state of the situation right now.
Right, we're not going to lead you in on Monday. Okay, now in the rest of the Championship, Hull are doing really well. Steve Bruce's Hull. And in other news, they've put the flat underneath us up for sale. So I imagine that probably not unconnected. He's decided they're going to make a go of it there in Hull. Unbeaten in 10.
Are you thinking of buying it and maybe...
Putting a little spiral staircase up and maybe a patio with a... Mm. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Hull are doing brilliantly, and it's all about the defence. They've only conceded 8 goals in their 16 league games. They're scoring well as well, you know, 26 goals for, which is the second highest in the division. Mm. But what's key here is that QPR aside, the relegated teams are actually doing fantastically well. Hull top, Burnley third, only 2 points behind Hull, suggesting that, you know, these days actually the Premier League money is sufficiently large that you do get a massive competitive advantage down, unless you're an idiot club like QPR.
It should be said that Steve Bruce has been here before. I think he's one of the few, if not the only, Premier League manager to get relegated, stay with the club, and then get promoted immediately the next season, which he did with Birmingham. For most clubs, it tends to go in the QPR direction of not really settling at all and ending up mid-table, sacking managers left, right and centre.
And so, same with Burnley, stability there as well. Sean Dyche.
Burnley are a very sensibly run club. Certainly, in that when they reached the Premier League, they thought instead of just spuffing money everywhere on everything, we'll just work on the facilities. Their training grounds being expanded hugely, more technology coming in, more staff behind the scenes. So it was all part of a long-term project that's now left them in a very, very strong position.
Well, QPR's aim was to replicate that by getting Lee Hughes, the former Burnley CEO, in as CEO at Loftus Road. But of course, it doesn't really work that way in Shepherd's Bush.
How is your training ground working out, though, mate?
Oh, yeah, there's still a park covered with dog excrement somewhere that has still not been developed into a training ground. And still a new stadium plan that is nowhere near becoming a new stadium as well.
Can I give you a cuddle? I just feel like you need a cuddle.
It's a very attractive offer, Ian, but maybe later.
Let it all out.
Let's just talk about Brighton for a second, because you mentioned Burnley in third and Hull on the top. Well, the team in between them are the unbeaten Seagulls. Boom, how about that? They had 6 draws in 10. That's a lot of draws.
It is.
You remember we went down to Brighton, Barry? We met that nice chap who does the Brighton radio show thing.
Yeah.
All right, if only he were here now.
Yeah, the draws is the problem. You know, 16 games, it's 9 wins and 7 draws, and they're not converting enough games into wins. But to be unbeaten at this stage in the Championship is a significant achievement, because it remains, as they like to say, a topsy-turvy division.
It certainly is. Well, we were making the point previously that you almost don't want to be top right now. You know, you want to pace it a little bit better. Anyway, that's enough Championship chat for now. In a second or two, we're going to hear about MLS reaching the playoffs and get one or two of your questions in as well.
Hello, Football Weekly listeners. Producer Ben here with details of an exclusive offer for your hirsute and handsome selves. We've teamed up with Cornerstone, a young British company determined to improve the way you shave. With Cornerstone, you'll never have to worry about your blades being blunt again. You'll get their super sharp razors and other shaving supplies delivered right to your door. And because you listen to Football Weekly, Cornerstone want to give you £10 off your first order, meaning you can get started on one of their flexible plans and get your free personalised aluminium razor from just £4. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian and discover an even better way to shave. That's cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Mmm, feel my cheeks. Feel my cheeks, Ian.
Oh, nice.
Smooth. Smooth cheeks. Yeah.
What about your face?
Listeners. It's about that time of year when we talk soccer. Playoff time. In MLS, Columbus Crew going to be taking on New York Red Bulls, while the FC Dallas take on the Portland Timbers in the West. Stevie G's LA Galaxy, who of course are the cup holders, got knocked out. New York City FC, despite having Lampard, Pirlo and even David Villa, didn't make it to the playoffs, only 10 wins in 34 games in the regular season. Which saw, indeed, their manager Jason Christ lose his job, and he got replaced, you probably saw, by Patrick Vieira. Out of Manchester City. It's all very exciting, so much so that a little bit earlier, producer Ben spoke to George Qureshi, editor of the US soccer quarterly Howler, to find out what sort of reception Vieira's appointment has received.
You know, from people who know the league, it's been a little bit of puzzlement. MLS, as you probably know, has a pretty arcane set of rules about signing players and salary caps and transfer windows and things like that. And the coaches who have had the most success tend to be coaches who are really familiar with that setup, who have played in the league, or at least have some really good advisors. And Jason Christ was hired specifically for this purpose. What he did with Real Salt Lake in the years that he was there was build a really strong core of players and manage the supporting cast in a way that kept the team strong, which is difficult to do in a league where salary caps mean that successful teams often break up after not too long. And so Vieira coming in seems to turn that a little bit on its head. And I think people are thinking, well, you know, he's a big name. He's someone who people abroad will recognize. But will he be able to navigate the sometimes pretty mysterious ways of the league in a successful way?
He was really well regarded at City, and he was linked with the Newcastle job before they gave it to Steve McClaren. What are the challenges at New York, and how much pressure is he under to deliver?
It's hard to say. He's under pressure because NYCFC has launched, and they with a lot of notice, and they've really, you know, they've come into a very crowded sports marketplace in New York City and tried from the very beginning to be successful. And that's not only tough because they're competing against a very established soccer team in the New York Red Bulls, but they're competing against, you know, a bunch of other sports franchises in the area. At the same time, you know, New York City is obviously owned by Manchester City. So, you know, whenever you come in and you have a very successful, I guess, mother club, if you will, you know, I guess the pressure is going to be coming from there as well. At the same time, they're an expansion team. This will be their second year playing in MLS. And so you would assume that there's a little bit of leniency there and some time for him to get going. But then again, Jason Christ was fired after just one season. That wasn't the worst season. It was, you know, they were in the playoff hunt until I believe August, which is pretty late in the season. And they did better than some other teams who have come into the league and floundered for years before getting their act together. Toronto being sort of the poster child for that scenario. They just made the playoffs for the first time this year.
Okay, so New York were one of a number of sides who have these star players who haven't made it far into the postseason. So you've also got Gerrard at LA Galaxy and Kaká's Orlando City. So what does the lineup in the conference finals tell us about the state of MLS and US soccer more broadly?
It's always tempting to read read large sweeping conclusions into, you know, out of you know, who's doing well at the moment. I would say though that the trend has been for teams that are really balanced and really cohesive from the first player on the team sheet to the 11th or you know the 18th to do better than teams that have, say, a global superstar like David Beckham or Kaká, or, you know, in more recent years, David Villa, or I guess Steven Gerrard. You know, those teams that are a little less balanced tend to not do as well. And part of that is the age of some of these players. They come in, and, you know, Steven Gerrard was saying that he was surprised by the distances they were traveling and the altitude and the...
If any English footballers listen to your show, they should just be warned. They're also going to have to fly to Canada sometimes. It's a big country. It's a big continent. And you know, that wears on a 36-year-old body and someone who's coming. You know, Gerrard came at the end of the English season. So he's sort of playing without much of a break. And so you get guys like that. And, you know, for MLS teams, there's a calculus that definitely takes into account the on-field play, and I think that would be foremost for every team that signs a big superstar. But there's also the off-field calculus, which is, you know, can this guy sell jerseys? Can he get people to come to the games? And balancing those is very tricky, and not every coach can do it. Bruce Arena with LA has been probably the most successful, but what you see from this playoff field of four teams without a huge superstar and with coaches who have a ton of MLS experience is that, you know, the balance and the cohesiveness is really, really key to getting pretty far in the postseason.
Qureshi by name, Qureshi by nature. That was very weird. I'm going to follow that. MLS. The playoffs, very exciting. Anyway, he hosts, George Qureshi, the weekly podcast series called Dummy. And more details on our blog. I did mention questions. I have to say that there's a train going toot toot, pulling out of a platform. Have we got time for one or two? I should give a shout out.
Are we going to Birmingham on a steam train?
I believe we are. FC, you're in front, shoveling coal.
Great.
FCUM Radio got nominated and in the FSF Awards along with the big boys. They said, could we have a shout out? Of course. Peter Nichols, loads of people wrote in questions. We're going to get to these on Monday. A quick mention for Peter Nichols, who asked, who's the most unlikely overachievers this season? Is it Leicester in England, Sassuolo in Italy, or Celta Vigo in La Liga? We'll touch on that on Monday. But your suggestion that Luca Moroni playing as a holding midfielder for Carpi technically makes him a Carpi DM is probably genius. And the note on which we will leave today's Football Weekly, not quite as extra as we planned. But anyway, we'll be back on Monday with loads more of your questions. Keep them flooding in. Barry, you won't be there because you'll be packing your bags for Oz.
Yep.
So have a great trip and we'll see you... When are you back?
Christmas Day.
Oh, bless.
That's the best present we could ask
for. Well, have a super trip. Godspeed, Barry. Godspeed. Godspeed, Australia. Ian, looking forward to seeing you hopefully a little bit before that.
Oh, yes.
And Michael, I hope we've got something a little bit sunnier for us to discuss with you next time you hove into our view.
Next time QPR soccer manager.
Indeed, as you say. Many thanks, producer Ben. Thanks, listeners. See you Monday.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.